It's 8:16 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, coming up tomorrow, the public's opportunity to weigh in on the Mountain to Valley study, which is now underway. In the studio with details on how to participate, as well as some other transit and transportation issues, I have Summit County Regional Transportation Planner Caroline Rodriguez, along with Park City Transportation Manager Alfred Knotts. Good morning.
Good morning.
So one of the objectives of Mountain Accord, now the Central Wasatch Commission, is transportation. Summit County and Park City, as we've been reporting, along with other partners, conducting a study to evaluate the transportation connections between Salt Lake and Greater Park City area. Currently, the study focuses on State Route 224 between Kimball Junction and Park City. A deadline to comment is coming up December 12th. So, Alfred, we've got a meeting that people can also participate in addition to filling out the survey?
Yes. Yeah, we'll have an open house and set up some booths and some stations where people can go around and ask questions. There'll be alternatives for alignments and then also alternatives for mode choice, too, and to weigh in on those also. So,
okay, so when and where is the open house?
It will be at the Park City Library. It will be from 5 until 7. And then there's still the online option also. So we do have a pretty robust website just for the project that's specific for the project, valleytomountainstudy.com.
Okay. Tell me about the open house. There's going to be a lot more there than just the Valley to Mountain study?
No, it'll just be focused specifically on that study. But we will have different booths and stations where people can go around and ask questions, similar to the 248 open house that we had also. So we'll be specific to this project.
Okay, and we're doing this because it's a UDOT requirement?
It's also an FTA requirement. So this, when we come up with a locally preferred alternative that will be potentially adopted or endorsed by both the county and the city, then that goes to UDOT and the Federal Transit Administration as a locally preferred alternative, which gets you in line for additional funding. It helps streamline the environmental process, so you don't have to evaluate a whole suite of alternatives. You can essentially go to your locally preferred alternative and go into the environmental clearance process, because it shows that you have done local outreach, you have public endorsement, and you have legislative endorsement from your councils also. So that helps streamline the process and get the project directly into the NEPA process.
All right. So the booths are broken up into what? Just to each of the three different alternatives?
Yes. And then project overviews, purpose and need of the project, project goals and objectives to make sure that the community all endorses. And then also we'll have a overview of the previous alternatives, modes that were evaluated also, and why those were rejected or discarded.
Okay. And what we're trying to do with this study is basically just reduce the number of cars on 224 without having to put down a lot more pavement?
Correct. Exactly. This study is trying to define a mass transit alternative. So that's exactly the point, is to reduce the people driving alone in their vehicles on 224.
All right. I guess there's a big disconnect, though. So, I mean, if you've got people traveling from Salt Lake, I mean, is it they have to would catch that SLC to PC bus? Is that?
And part of the study looks at is a service plan for the existing PC to SLC bus. So it'll look at what levels of service we need to add on that bus to make that connection feasible for people so they can use transit all the way up.
Right, because we don't have anywhere to put them once they get here. So if they drive, they're not getting out of their car.
Exactly.
All right. Let's see. Do you guys have any idea how many responses to the survey? Do you see results of those?
Yeah, we've had over 700 already on online responses. And if people have logged on and are sort of intimidated by the survey process, that's part of the reason we're having this open house. They will be able to fill out the survey in person at the library, with the assistance of a staff member, so that we can walk them through if they have any questions.
Okay. 700 doesn't seem like a lot, though, because we've got a lot more than that traveling along that corridor.
Yeah, you know, this is our second round of survey for this study, and it doesn't seem like a lot, but we are putting out the word best we can. It's been on social media. It's been it's gone out through all of our resort, partner emails. It's gone out through a lot of our planning partner emails, UDOT, Park City, Summit County. I mean, we are doing the best we can. We just need people to take those 5 minutes out of their day and look at the survey and fill it out.
Mm-hmm. And you guys aren't going to come up with a recommendation until you've seen the results then?
Correct.
I mean, you personally don't think one's better than the other?
No. I mean, it's all part of the process. Our job is to facilitate the process and inform and educate. But it's really up to the public to really nail down what that alternative is and what the locally preferred alternative is for the community. And we really need to look at the future, too. So it does analyze existing conditions and future projections, too, about what alternative best meets those objectives.
Yeah. And one of the things I really liked about the way we structured this study is that we weren't looking at this alternative purely from a fiscal point of view or an operations point of view. We also asked people to comment on community character and their views of how it would impact the environment. So we're really taking into account the greater Park City community preference. And I think that's why it's important for our local residents and those that come up here to recreate to really participate, because we have made accommodations for those types of viewpoints.
Yeah. And I guess the way I think of this, I mean, why would we do anything other than just putting it down the middle? Because it seems to me if the idea is not to build more roadway, we could then, if we're putting the train tracks eventually on the outside, that means then that that's never going to be available for different modes of transportation, like a lot of e-bikes or whatever. I mean, I guess I've just, maybe you can explain some of the pros and cons then of not putting it in the, you know, the train tracks down the middle of the road, right? Because then you can almost reclaim the outsides of the highway.
Yeah, and that's some of the pros and cons that we need to look at with the community also. The center running does pose safety issues and access issues also, and even snow removal and maintenance issues also. So those are things that we need to evaluate. The side running does provide more direct access to residential communities and adjacent land uses and commercial uses also, and not having that center running. So those are the pros and the cons to kind of to weigh out.
Yeah, but does it then preclude any kind of reclaiming for other modes of transportation?
We do muscle-powered? We do have a robust trail system also. So, we'd like to get some of those modes on the actual trail itself. But we also do look at what we can potentially repurpose in the future also. So those are some of the things that we do have to weigh.
Right. But eventually, if you were to put light rail, that's going to be even closer to the people walking and riding their bikes.
Correct.
Right? If they're on the outside.
Yes. And that's something
that doesn't seem very safe.
No. And that's something we do have to evaluate. There is that physical separation. But also, as Caroline mentioned, you know, what best fits the context of the community also? Does that provide what the community wants, or do we need to look at providing the other modes through those corridors also?
Right. Otherwise, we're starting to talk about lots of underground tunneling to get people from the middle to the outside.
Exactly.
Anybody have any updates on Mountain Accord? It's now the Central Wasatch Commission. The website hasn't even been changed to recognize that.
So we've been actually waiting to go down there and give an update on the Valley and Mountain Study. And I think this is the third time the meetings have been postponed. And it seems to me that it's a scheduling issue, you know, trying to sort of wrangle cats into getting everybody together at once. That's all I can say. I have no further information than that.
Okay.
Our next meeting is scheduled for December 18th.
All right. Is it having to do with some of the legal issues involved with Mountain Accord?
If it is, I'm not aware of that.
Okay. Let's see. Real quick, Alfred, we've got some changes with regard to the Prospector routes. Bus routes.
We just received a lot of feedback over the last couple of weeks. We did make some service changes that we implemented on November 17th, I believe, to coincide when we anticipated the mountain opening. And that was related to the yellow and the red route. We got a lot of public feedback, both positive and negative, about how those routes are operating. The main issue is that the red no longer served the Wyatt Earp, the eastern portion of Prospector neighborhood. So that eliminated direct access to Park City Mountain without having to do a transfer of sorts. So we got a lot of feedback. We came up with some other solutions literally on Friday afternoon. I believe it was actually Thursday afternoon, because we did present it to the council as part of our monthly update. And then sent that information over to the Prospector HOA folks. And we have requested comments and feedback by 5 o'clock today so that we can make any service modifications, change our schedules, contact businesses and contact neighborhoods, and then also make any changes to the signage also as well. So it does provide, the proposed alternative does provide direct access throughout Prospector neighborhood to Park City Mountain.
All right. So we've got the Yellow Express, and that's between Prospector and Old Town, basically. And that's it.
Correct.
Doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't go to Deer Valley anymore. Doesn't.
That is correct. And that's some of the feedback we want also as well. It was on the yellow as well.
Okay. And then the red bus is basically a longer route now because it's going to go to both Park City. It's going to go to Fresh Mark or Dan's, whatever, the market.
Yes.
And then it's going to go to Fresh Market, the resort, Park City, Old Town, Deer Valley, back to Old Town, back to the resort, and through. So that's a long bus ride.
It is a long bus ride, and that was some of the things we had to weigh. We're limited on human resources and fiscal resources. We're essentially require about 140 drivers at peak time. We have about 100 right now. So that's some of the things we need to look at. Do we have even have the drivers? We had to switch a bus. One of the alternatives to serve that red route is to provide additional bus from the yellow onto the red. So that's how we made up that gap.
All right. When do you have to make a decision? I mean, when does the full winter bus schedule go into effect?
It went into effect this weekend, so we need to make these changes immediately. I know that's not typically the best planning or part of the process, but we got feedback from the community. We were asked to take another look at a few other alternatives. We've done so, and we presented those to the folks that are the primary users of that route. So we would like to make those changes ASAP to coincide with the ski season.
Okay.
We will be having a meeting tentatively scheduled for the 12th to go over those route modifications also. And we don't have a location for that just yet, but we'll make sure everybody's aware.
All right. And then real quick, Caroline, just asking people to kind of get out of their cars and take a bus to the resorts, huh?
Yep. Just want to remind everybody that taking the bus is a great way to get to the resorts, especially with the express service. It's easy. It's fast. You don't have to worry about driving or parking. I also want to remind everyone that the breakdown bus lane heading northbound, that is out of town on 224, is not your personal travel lane. It's there for a reason. It's breakdown for safety. It's there for the bus. Please, please, please do not drive your personal vehicle in that lane. We are increasing enforcement and looking for those drivers.
So people see the bus traveling and figure, I can go too. Is that the problem?
Exactly. Or they see a clear lane and figure, well, I'm turning right in a mile anyway, so I'll just get in it now. And that's really not the purpose of the lane. And like I said, we're trying to step up enforcement. So watch out for that.
Okay. Anything else, guys?
Nope.
I believe that's it.
All right. Caroline and Alfred, thank you.
Thanks.
Park City Board of Education meeting in a special regular session tomorrow at the school district office at 9 o'clock. On the phone with me from the superintendent of schools, Amber Conley. Good morning, Amber.
Morning, Leslie.
So real quick, you're down at a meeting for what this morning?
We have our monthly superintendent's meeting. So the 41 superintendents in the state get together and go through today specifically legislative forecast that we're getting ready to hit the legislative season starting in January.
Okay. Well, maybe we can get an update with that later. Can you provide us any kind of update on high school principal Bob O'Connor?
At this time, I can't. We're just continuing to move forward with having our interim, Dr. Einhorn. I hope to have some information within the next couple of weeks that we'll be able to share.
Okay. And then Dr. Einhorn, who's kind of taken over her job?
Right. So right now we've looked at all of her job duties and she's actually been able to really manage those right now. She's splitting her time. So basically setting up office there at the high school. We have two very capable assistant principals, Phyllis Suggett and Caleb Fine at the high school. And so she's there, of course, as a seasoned administrator, but really allowing them to take that leadership.
All right. Let's see. Taking a look at the agenda, first up is a discussion with regard to master planning. The board has hired the consultant Collaborative Learning Network. Can you tell us what the process is here?
Right. So we went out for an RFP to have a consultant come in and just do a high-level process for master planning. So this isn't getting into the nitty-gritty of master planning. It's actually helping the board lay out that process. And so he has years of experience doing that. He'll be in our district today and tomorrow.
And just to learn more about the district, or?
Right. So he'll be interviewing different constituents, board members, as well as administration, just to get a good feel of where we are right now with what we've done and where we need to go. And then it's hopefully going to be about a 30 to 45 day process that then we can roll out to the community of saying, here's what the process is going to be, so we can make sure that we have full engagement with our community.
So a new master plan would be complete, you're saying, in the next 3 months?
Nope. What we anticipate is that he's going to lay that process out for us, so it's very clearly defined.
All right. And then at what point does the building needs and facility needs come as part of that?
Right. So we've started our capital discussions right now. We have a very clean, clear process that we do that each year. As you know, there's been some things at Treasure Mountain specifically that we've put on hold given just the unknowing of what we were going to do with the building. But it looks like that we'll have to be able to do some of those repairs that we need to be able to do. Nothing major, but enough that it's time for us to start putting a little bit of money into the building.
Yeah, like the HVAC system, right?
We actually got that one finished this last summer and got all the carpets cleaned as well. Some of the things that I would say bigger would be some of the pipes. With the sewer, we've had some issues with corrosion there. So I would say those are some of the bigger tickets.
All right. Let's see. Also a discussion with regard to academic success, and we're talking about the new reading program, MTSS.
So MTSS, I'm going to take you a much more high level. It's called the Multi-Tiered System of Support. And so it's you know, this is research that's come out probably 10 to 15 years ago, but it's time for us to look at our levels of support for students. So it really doesn't have, of course, reading is part of our curriculum, but it's much more high level as far as teaching all of our curriculum and all of our content. So when what is tier one means that every student, 80% of our students are able to learn the content in tier one. Tier two means that they need to be able to have an extra dose, some more intensive instruction around the content, so they are having those masteries of skills. And then tier three is specialized instruction. And so that's typically when you get into your special education or your newcomers for language. So what it is being able to clearly define that and have a conversation. This first agenda item is just having a conversation with the board, helping them be able to understand very educational foundation for where we're headed with support.
All right. You'll also be meeting with Alfred Knotts and Julia Collins from Park City Municipal, talking a little bit about plans for 248. What's the district's role in all of this?
Well, as you know, we're definitely major users of that, and so we want to be good partners and help them and us achieve what we need to do, and that's getting our students to school on time and safely. So looking forward to having them share. Sounded like they were just on the radio.
Right. Didn't talk too much about that. But in terms of, you know, we had seen some plans years ago in terms of just getting the cars off of 248 and somehow taking some kind of alternative route into the school campus. Is that still part of the plans here? Or
you know what? I've seen a couple different plans. One of the changes would be the way the buses are coming into the school and able to drop off, and even possibly having that bus route, which, as you know, would greatly help us with our traffic. But then it comes back to behaviors of drivers, right? Not only with our students, but also with our parents dropping off. So are there better ways to be able to get our kids to school and there on time?
All right. Let's see. Excellent personnel. You'll be talking about a human resource review. So tell me about this. We're talking about teacher recruitment here?
Right. So what we do throughout the since I've been here, we take different departments and we do reviews of what's going well, what needs improved. And so it's the human resource turn, basically. And so what we've done is we hired a consultant this summer, and he was able to work with some of our hiring managers, the HR department, met with board members and have come up with some recommendations to get us to that next level. Of course, recruitment and retention are at the top. So when you get into that, it's branding and marketing, and how can we get the best of the best and get them to be able to teach here in Park City.
All right.
And so what we'll be doing is just going through that review and what we've been doing as far as next steps.
All right. Also, board scheduled to make a decision with regard to an appeal of a student suspension. And I know you can't talk personnel, but the student appealed the suspension. But isn't it too late because the suspension's already happened, no?
So in policy, there is an appeal process that that there would be a possibility for that decision to be overturned. And so in policy, within 10 days of the decision being made by the hearing officer, a student has that right to appeal to the board in this situation.
All right. Can you give us any of the circumstances? What was the suspension for?
I can't. I'm sorry.
All right.
Confidential.
Also wanted to ask you about one of the policies for adoption. We're talking about a dual enrollment, and this is for homeschool students. What does this policy lay out?
Right. So about 3 years ago, there were some changes legislatively that allows, of course, our homeschool students to take courses and be dual enrolled. And so this policy itself is just cleaning that language up. There's still some differences of opinions by legal counsel throughout the state when you get into sharing students among school districts. And so, you know, attending a private school and being able to then take classes at the high school. So this policy is just able to update that language.
Okay. And real quick, just wanted to bring up a couple of dates. December 7th, we've got a lunch and learn, an opportunity for parents to come learn about internet safety.
Right. We're excited to have NetSmart come in, and they do a lot of our internet safety for students. But as we have moved through being able to provide more opportunities for parents to learn how to be active parents and be able to understand the technology that their students are using, this is going to be a great lunch and learn. And I encourage as many people to grab their lunch and come to the district office and listen to just some new ways that we can keep our kids safe.
Okay. And then on December 13th at Ecker Hill, between 1 and 3, this is a Board of Education, just what, casual get-together?
Right. So what we've heard is, you know, sometimes we have people asking to present information at the governing board meeting, and oftentimes those agendas get very, very full. And so this is an opportunity for people to come meet with a couple of board members in an informal setting, have a conversation. And we had one a couple weeks ago. It was a decent turnout, great conversation. And so we're going to just continue that with the board members. So we're asking the community to come out and talk to board members.
So because there's no quorum, you don't have to notice the meeting. But how do we know what the agenda items will be?
Right. So what we typically, what we did the last time is that if there was someone requesting to have a specific item, they contacted the board president, Andrew Kaplan, and he was able to schedule them. Otherwise, it's just a conversation, questions that people can come in and ask questions of the board.
All right. And also wanted to alert parents that there is a new text messaging system for them to basically they just text their name to 435-602-4444. What kind of text would they receive if they sign up for this?
Right. So first one will be a thank you for signing up. Secondly, it's going to be a way to gather information when we need information and also be able to notify quickly, just like we had with the lockdown a couple weeks ago, being able to improve that system so parents have immediate notification. Really excited about this. This is a local company that we've been partnering with for the last year, and their services just continue to improve based on what we need them to do.
All right. Is this a new system? I mean, do people need to re-up if they had already been part of a text?
No, if they've already signed up last year, they do not need to do that.
Okay. Anything else, Amber, you wanted to mention?
No. Nope. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you. Superintendent of Park City Schools, Amber Conley. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:42 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour here on KPCW. You're joining me now on the phone with an update from U.S. Ski and Snowboard, Tom Kelly. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Leslie. And boy, nice to see a winter wonderland out there this morning, isn't it?
Oh, it sure is. Yeah. And gosh, great to see some excellent programs on the Olympic Channel this weekend. We saw lots of ski racing. Let's kick it off first with the men were in Beaver Creek and some good news in the fact that Ted Ligety is back on skis and flying down the hill.
Yeah, you know, it was really funny because Ted, after the race, he talked about how disappointed he was that this is the worst he's ever done at Beaver Creek. In fact, it is the worst GS he's ever skied at Beaver Creek. But I tell you, great happiness with everybody to see that he is back. He is going to be competitive. He was second after the first run, even ahead of Marcel Hirscher. So it looks like it's a healthy Ted Ligety that's back, and I think everybody feels pretty good about it. Seventh for him in the Giant Slalom, not where he wanted to finish, but absolutely showed signs that he is back. Tommy Ford, too, stepping it up another notch. Tommy's someone who had a very, really serious backcountry skiing accident in 2013. Out of the sport for 2 years, came back, is just slowly, steadily moving up, but a really solid 10th place finish for him. Disappointing, though, on the speed side, 21st is all we could muster in the downhill in the Super G. Andrew Weibrecht, 21st in Super G, and Bryce Bennett, 21st in downhill. Steven Nyman, still coming back from the injury. He's been doing quite well on snow training. He decided to forerun and not get into the competition and hoping that he'll be back in Val Gardena in the next downhill in 2 weeks. So, you know, overall at Beaver Creek, we're going to leave there with optimism for Ted, but no, we have a lot of work to do on the speed side.
Yeah, and one of Ted's issues, certainly he had injured himself, but he also had some back, you know, back injury, a lot of back pain. Is that gone?
You know, two things that Ted had. Going back a couple of years ago, he had the knee injury, had surgery for that, came back last season, had a horrible back injury, back pain situation, had that dealt with, and it looks like he's really back at full speed. It was just nice to see him lay out those Ted Ligety GS turns, hip down on the snow, hand down on the snow, and just really, you know, hauling the G-forces around the gates.
Okay. And the women, boy, a surprise here. What's usually known as Lake Lindsay was really Michaela Schifrin all 3 days. Pretty amazing. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it really was. It was great to see. And we knew she was coming on in speed and she would put in a formidable appearance up in Lake Louise this year. I don't think anyone expected that she would be third in the downhill on Friday and then first and winning it on Saturday. Only her fourth World Cup downhill. I did a little check. If you look at the top 10 World Cup downhill winners of all time, there's only one of them that won a World Cup in less time. That was Isolde Koster, who won her third, Michaela winning her fourth. Most it's taken them a dozen or more times before they win. So pretty impressive. She came back and was fifth in the Super G, still has the World Cup lead, battling with Victoria Rebensburg. And I think that's going to be quite a battle this year.
Okay, so they head back to Europe now.
They're heading over to Europe now. The men are going to Val d'Isère, so we'll see Ted Ligety in the Giant Slalom, also a slalom over there in Val d'Isère. The women head to Samaritz for an Alpine combined and a couple of Super Gs. These will be the last speed races we'll see Michaela in until Cortina, the third week in January. But, you know, fingers crossed that it's going to continue that way. And, you know, fans can watch all of the action on Olympic Channel and also NBCSN this year. It was interesting to note our races at Beaver Creek and also at Killington, a dramatic uptick in the ratings, which we're really happy to see. And big thanks to NBC on that. But Olympic Channel broadcasting everything live with both television and live streaming.
And then Lindsay, of course, nasty looking crash in the downhill, but just kind of got back up and skied off. So she's okay?
Yeah, she's fine. You know, just a little bit banged and bruised. And, you know, I think certainly disappointed coming out of there without much for results. And, of course, that she's been so strong on. But she'll pick it up and she'll head over to St. Ritz. And I think we'll see her to be really competitive in the Super G this weekend.
All right. Let's see. Cross country. What have we got going on there?
You know, quite a season so far. One of the things that has been characteristic of our team is we've been stronger on the freestyle side, freestyle technique side, as opposed to classic. That is really changing, and it's changing at a good time because some of the key races, like the sprint, will be classic in Pyeongchang this year. Over the weekend, Sadie Bjornsson, second straight weekend in a classic sprint on the podium. She was third. Jessie Diggins, sixth in a classic sprint, matching her career best finish in classic. Jessie also fifth in the skiathlon, and she was running third in the classic portion of that event. So big step up for her. Sadie's brother, Eric, with a career best 20th in the skiathlon. His results have been in the 20s the last couple races, but for him, it's a real big step up and a real bright spot on the men's team right now. Two American women in the top 10 in the World Cup rankings. Haven't seen that in a while, and really hats off to that team for a great weekend. They now head down to Davos, which is more or less their kind of home field down in Central Europe. Freestyle weekend with freestyle sprints on Saturday. That is not an Olympic discipline this year with freestyle. But on Sunday, watch for Jesse Diggins in the 10K freestyle event. That's an Olympic discipline, and that's one where she is very, very strong. So hoping for some good results out of Davos this weekend.
Okay. The ski jumpers were also in Norway and Russia, it looks like.
Yeah, the women were in Norway, and a disappointing weekend there. Nita England, 30th for the only U.S. point-scoring finish across three events. Abby Ringquist from Park City, 32nd and 33rd on the 98-meter hill. No Americans qualified for the big hill competition, which was really disappointing. A little bit better story over the men's side. Only one qualifier, that being Will Rhodes from Park City. The men were as Nizhny Tagil in Russia. Kind of a remote outpost event there. On the big hill, Will Rhodes finishing with a 21st and a 29th. 2 point scoring finishes, first in his career, and a great way for the men to kick off the season.
All right, and not much from Sarah Hendrickson. What's going on with her?
I don't know, disappointing for her. She was way back in qualifying, so missed the opportunity to compete. They're going to take a week off, and then they head to Hinterzart in Germany. The women in 2 weeks, the men are in Titisee, Germany, this coming weekend. And you can watch all of those on the Olympic Channel.
Okay, and then let's see, we've got the Olympic qualifying in the U.S. Grand Prix in Breckenridge here.
Yeah, coming up with a couple of weekends of action in qualifying for the Olympics. First of all, we have the Toyota U.S. Grand Prix at Copper, and then we have the Dew Tour at Breckenridge, both important Olympic qualifying events for free ski and snowboarding. Hopefully going to see Sean White back in action there, and then the Moguls opener coming up in Ruka, Finland this weekend, and snowboard cross and ski cross getting into action in Val Thorens, France. So we're starting to heat up the action in all of these events, qualifying athletes, hopefully, for the Olympics coming up in Pyeongchang.
Okay. Tom, anything else?
Well, that'll do it. Just think snow.
Okay. Thanks.